What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, episode 69, Motocross, Triathlons, and Athletic Trainers, recorded February 12th, 2014. This week, our special guest is Keith Shireman, and he's going to talk about all of his experiences with motocross, and then currently he's involved in triathlons, and so he's going to tell us all about that kind of stuff. Of course, I am your host, Jeremy Jackson. With me today is...
George.
Marlon.
Jocelyn.
Lorena.
Marissa.
We're missing a couple of students today. We got a couple of other students doing different jobs. So, and then we are running only audio on Skype with Keith because he's having some trouble with his internet connection. So if you want to listen to our conversation almost every single Wednesday, it's live. Check out sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. So then you can, it'll have a link to the Ustream feed, to the Hangout on Air feed. You can kind of join our conversation by using the hashtag TheSMB on Twitter. George is on Twitter today because Aisha's out. So using the hashtag TheSMB. And then today Marlon is running the Hangout, so she should be able to see any of those comments pop up. Hopefully we can ask those of Keith if we get the chance. All right, so a little bit about Keith. He's been an athletic trainer for 15 years, working for WRMC Pros Sports Medicine. Keith, tell us about that.
I work for, like you said, WRMC Pro Sports Medicine. It's here in Batesville, Arkansas. Been here, this is my seventh, finishing up my seventh year here. Great place to be. WRMC Pros is the hospital here in Batesville. Have a great time taking care of all these athletes here. I've actually, sounds like you have several students there with you. I've got four of mine in here right now. A fifth one's on the way, I believe. A couple others had some other jobs to do today, so... it's a good opportunity to for these folks to listen more about athletic training and to see if that's what they want to do in a career or maybe something else in the sports medicine field in general. So I guess just if you want me to, I'll just a little bit about myself. Like I said, this is April. I'll be starting my 16th year as an athletic trainer. I've had the opportunity to work on a lot of different sports. I'm one of the last few that got to go through athletic training as an internship. Nowadays, of course, you have to go through a curriculum program to be a part, to be an athletic trainer and to get your hours and such. That gave me a lot of opportunities to venture out into other, look at different sports to where athletic training could be a part of. And that's, motocross was a lot in my background. I never did, grew up playing football, basketball, and, you know, all the basic sports in high school. So motocross was something I got into in high school and started riding and racing and such, and got into college and was kind of looking at athletic training as a degree and such. So I thought, well, that'd be pretty cool. So I started my journey as an athletic trainer, and then came up with I saw that there was – I felt like there was a need in motocross with athletic training, with a lot of the injuries, a lot of the taping, a lot of the rehab and such that could go on. So I kind of started that at the local level where I'm at in Arkansas. So, and just started doing some local races. Once I stopped doing more racing professionally myself, I started just, of course, going to college, doing athletic training, and trying to present it, trying to see if there was a spot for it somewhere in motocross. And got through college, got certified in 1998, was able to start with a sports medicine group of doctors in Little Rock, Arkansas right away, and had the opportunity to start doing more, span out to do more athletic training with motocross. And basically started from that, I got phone calls from some friends that I knew who were professional riders over the years and from their team managers. And the team managers gave me a call and said, hey, we need some help. We need some medical help on this specific racing series. Said, we've got a lot of guys hurt that are getting hurt, and we need somebody to help them out. And I said, sure, let's take a look at it and talk to some sponsors and talk to the team managers. Some of the teams got together, and we put some money together and was able to start covering the series. And it's now the National Arena Cross Series. And we had a great time starting that up. I was able to do that for a few years until, of course, with the way the economy is going, it's kind of hard to keep up with sponsorship. And with anything like this, it takes quite a bit of money to get to different areas, different places to do so. The first year I did this series, I was in 13 different cities, 13 weekends in a row. So it made it pretty tough to leave out on a Friday. I'd have to fly out on a Friday morning. We had racing on Friday night, Saturday night, jump on a plane Sunday morning, come back home, and then get up Monday morning and do my job as an athletic trainer. So it was pretty strenuous at times, but then the series started taking breaks a little bit here and there. So with athletic training, I was able to gain some more experience in those areas. You get to see injuries that you may or may not see at the high school level. You may or may not see at the professional level. So it was it's a pretty neat experience, and I'm glad I got to go through it. I still work with some riders now as far as training and rehab and such like that, but I don't travel along on the series really anymore today. So,
all right, so let me jump in real quick.
Yeah, it's fine.
To kind of make sure that I'm clear, junior high, high school, that kind of stuff, you were a motocross racer yourself.
Yeah, that's it, exactly.
Mm-hmm. All right, so George is over here trying to Google your name to see if you show up on, if we can find any of your races or anything like that. So we're going to see if we can find you and maybe tell some stories or something, find some cool pictures. But then when did you find out about athletic training? Because usually if you're in sports in high school, you know about athletic trainers. You might have said this. I know you said, you know, you went to college to do athletic training. So where did you find out about athletic training?
Well, athletic training is just something that I actually, while I was in college, and of course we're watching football on television as we do today, and we wonder who is that person that runs out on the field, and you learn through those other sports too, that's an athletic trainer. Well, what does an athletic trainer do? And you come to find out just exactly what athletic training is and what an athletic trainer can do for said athlete. So I became intrigued with that and wanted to become an athletic trainer at that point. So it's hard to just walk up, today with, I can look at my students here and ask them if they want to be an athletic trainer. Of course, they're in high school and they're not sure what they want to do. So athletic training is something that will come to you. It's what you're going to be good at. It's not just you don't wake up one day and decide, hey, I want to do this, and it may not work out. It's something that you're in it for the long haul. It's athletic training has been a great experience for me, and I love being an athletic trainer. Athletic training is what I do best.
Tell us your story of becoming an athletic trainer.
When I was in college, when I finally decided that's what I wanted to do, I got my associate's degree out of the way. I went ahead and got, after 2 years, I decided, I wanted to be able to take care of athletes, be able to learn how to be an athletic trainer, and take that to a different sport. Now, back then, athletic training was unheard of in other sports outside of, say, football, basketball, baseball, those traditional type sports that we know today. As far as motocross, X Games, other sports, other extreme sports, it was unheard of at that time, and I wanted to be able to cover those things. And I had the opportunity to do that, and I knew that's what my heart was set on, that's what I wanted to do. And with athletic training, to be able to take it to that level, you have to know some people within the industry that you want to be a part of, and be in contact with those kind of people. And that's what I did as far as bringing motocross to athletic training. And I'm apologize if I'm skipping around on things. I'm kind of looking back and forth on this sheet too to try to make sure I'm covering stuff for you guys.
How can someone get involved with X Game Types athletic training?
Nowadays it's very tough to be involved in it. I've tried to get involved myself with X Games when they first got started. A lot of times they'll use a local sports medicine group. So let's just say, for example, if X Games is coming to Austin, Texas, I would find out who is, I would find out from either on the X Games website, ESPN, or someone, and start sending emails and finding out who is going to be the athletic trainer or the medical coordinator, I should say, for the group. And because I had checked on actually going out to Los Angeles when it was out there for a few years, I wanted to find out, and I found out the guy's name, and they were actually using local athletic trainers and a local orthopedic group to take care of those athletes. So it's kind of tough to get with those, but if you have something locally, you know, if there's something there close to you guys, I believe Houston's close to you, or if it's in Dallas or somewhere else, if you're interested, even if it's just a small event, so, you know, you could find out who's going to be the medical coordinator, who's going to be taking care of the athletes. You know, are there going to be athletic trainers present? Find out who's going to be there and how you can be a part of that.
All right. So, do you have to have any other certification, or there you, you know, in there? One of the other athletic trainer asked, do you have to be an EMT or anything like that?
No, you don't have to. As far as covering those events, they'll have local EMTs covering. They'll contract local EMTs to come and cover those events. It was the same way when I covered these arena cross races. Arena cross, let me throw in that that series that I covered, they're in smaller arenas, hence the name, of course. But they're not in the larger stadiums, or where you'll find the Monster Energy Supercross, the larger events. But the smaller ones that I covered were just smaller tracks. So, you do not have to be an EMT. I look for the athletic training component of how I can take care of the athlete. EMTs can only do so much at one of those events, but the athletic training can do so much more at these type of extreme events. So, but again, to be involved, you just have to find out who the sports medicine coordinator is and see if there's going to be athletic trainers there. And if you're already a certified athletic trainer, you know, you don't, and I checked too, also, you don't have to have an athletic training certification in each state you go to. You just have to, you know, as long as you're there just like for the weekend or for the day, that's okay from a legality standpoint.
All right, so it's kind of like the rodeo here. We talked to a friend, Jay Seitz, the head of the Sports Medicine Rodeo, and that's what he was saying. They have, you know, a team, and you have to, I think he said they have to pay dues to be part of that team so that you can work the rodeo, be part of the, I think it's the Justin Sports Medicine rodeo team. So that's essentially similar because, you know, we're not bringing in athletic trainers or doctors from out of state for this rodeo, but we're just taking our local team for the month of February or whatever when they're here and then serving that athlete group and then moving on. Is that essentially?
Yeah, there's... You know, Justin, of course, every group is different that's out there. I know on the Monster Energy Supercross Series, Doc Bodner is from California, and he has an athletic trainer. He and an athletic trainer and another doctor from California travel the country with the Asterix Sports Medicine Program, and they have athletic trainers, one or two, that may want to come and observe and maybe tape or be a part of, but they don't do a whole lot as far as evaluations and such, you know, they're at the event. They're basically there just trying to get more experience.
Did you deal more with emergency situations, or were there quite a bit of routine treatments you had with your motocross athletes?
With a lot of those, I'll tell you what, the first event that I had to go cover, we had just in practice alone, a lot of times, in motocross, you'll have injuries more in practice than you will in the event, just like you do in any other sport. The first event that I went to was actually, we were at in Fort Worth at Will Rogers Coliseum there. I had an athlete that I knew break both femurs. I mean, as soon as I walked in the door for practice and for that afternoon, you'll see femur fractures, you'll see all types of fractures, wrist fractures, humerus fractures, you know, ACL tears, you'll still see those, various contusions, and even pulmonary contusions where an athlete may have fallen and the handlebars on the motorcycle hit them in the chest and they're kind of coughing up a little bit of blood. And we hold them out for that event, get them checked out locally, you know, by a doctor locally before we allow them to participate, you know, in those events, you know, to continue practice and come back for the race that night. So I don't think I've really had any too serious. The femur fractures, that one was probably the worst worst one that I've had on there. Nothing, no real horror story per se. Anything that's been too bad. We do have to look at nowadays. Of course, there are concussions. You know, the big talk over the last several years has been concussions, and of course, a lot of that has changed since I was doing sports medicine with motocross.
All right, so, you know, you talked about femur fractures or fractures. Have you seen any of those that were, I mean, you know, the kids are always interested by the horror stories about things that are really bad. Have you seen any open fractures of the femur, anything like that?
It's hard. I'll tell you what, come to think of it, I did have another, tib fib fracture, lower extremity. It was down close, more towards his ankle, towards the lateral malleolus, medial lateral malleolus, and he had his boot on, and I had the EMTs were going to take his boot off because they were about to open it up, and you could see the blood coming out of it, and I asked them to keep the boot on as a splint, because I did not want to risk any type of infection to come about with all the dirt and dust and stuff that's in the area, and at the same time, I didn't want to have any life-threatening difficulties with them trying to remove that boot. Let them sedate him and do that at the hospital. And that rider, he actually came out of retirement to come back and do more racing. And that race, that right there, actually put him in retirement for good. He now does, Damon Bradshaw, he now does monster truck racing. Go from one extreme to the next. So he's on that monster truck circuit now doing that type of racing.
I don't know that I've ever had an open fracture. You know, this is my 10th year as a professional, and I did it for 5 years in college and 4 years in high school. I'm not sure that I've ever seen an open fracture. So that, mm-hmm. I'm sure it's a little more intense, but good it call is a on little, moving the boot.
It is a little more intense. It is a little more intense, and you know, of course, you don't have. You know, in our high school settings, you know, we have SAM splints, vacuum splints, everything we can think of, all the crutches and all right here. On the racing series, I'm kind of limited. At the time, I was kind of limited on what I had as far as those type of things. So that's the best thing that I thought of right off. You know, I mean, you have to make split-second decisions, especially if this happens, you know, during the race or during a practice. And I'm basically either by the start line or I'm out in the middle of the track trying to watch specific areas where I feel like that there could be, you know, more injuries or more accidents happening at that time. But you have to be real quick, and you have to stop and think real quick, make the best decisions possible, you know, for those athletes. So,
all right, so you're talking about being on the course when there's, I mean, usually... you know, I'd probably say half the people watch motocross for to see an accident, and then half watch it because they really enjoy racing. Most of the times when I see crashes, they're like on a turn, or especially if there's a turn right after a jump. Mm-hmm. Have two questions. Is that like normally where you would see an injury, where those crashes are? And then two is, have you ever been in a situation where you almost gotten hit while you were taking care of an athlete?
Funny you should ask that. I was going to bring that up. Actually, I did get hit one of the last few races that I did. We were in Kansas City, Kansas, and had a ride. I had my back to a rider. I was trying to get in a different area so where I could view a certain specific spot where riders were having trouble. And I moved over two steps too far, and I had one rider coming out of a turn, and he and another rider. And this was actually during the race that night, during their qualifying races that they have to go through to qualify for the main event that night. They got together coming out of the turn, and the one rider flipped his throttle, and the bike, actually his back tire, hit me in the back of the head and kind of knocked me down, you know, my back and my head. And I kind of laid there for a second, you know, in the fetal position, just kind of laid there, and had to gather my thoughts for a moment. It's like, all right. Make sure I can move, make sure my toes move, make sure my feet move, and everything else, if I'm all right, and I got up. So everybody, it's kind of funny. I tell that story a lot to people who remember that, because there's a lot of guys who were there, and at the time, of course, on this series, they didn't know what athletic trainers were, so they just called me Doc. So I had the nickname of Doc, so I wasn't really trying to portray a Doc, which we can't do that. So I just kind of let it, it just kind of stuck, and I just let it go. And all the guys were yelling, "Hey, somebody get the doc. Oh, it is the doc. Oh, no," you know, kind of thing. So it was kind of funny at the time. And you know, you think about those things, and you think about concussions, and you think, well, you know, it's different when it's actually you yourself that gets injured and not your athletes. So you kind of have to have a laundry list, per se, of things you go through in your head. And okay, is this okay? Is this all right? Am I okay? Get up, you know. I even woke myself up several times during that night to make sure that I didn't have a concussion, just to be on the safe side. So I didn't sleep well that night.
Man, that's pretty crazy. I mean, you know, you see bikers ride over each other all the time and, you know, they fall. But so is the collision with other bikers a big cause of injury, or is it just the, you know, landing off a jump, or, you know, the regular wear and tear of?
Well, a lot of the times the injuries that we do see is just from competition, just from trying to get to that neck, get that next, you know, get that next position so they can get a better start, get a better position start for the main event. There's so many different ways that you could see these injuries. It's kind of hard to pinpoint one specific area where you'll see them most at. I know this past weekend I was watching San Diego Supercross, and Chad Reed ran into somebody else's back tire trying to make a pass to catch up to a guy, and he falls, and he, I believe, fractures collarbone, bruised three ribs or fractured three ribs, and also has contusion as well. So, but, you know, and that's just in the heat of battle right there in the main event at the end, and the same thing can happen. And it doesn't matter how much experience you have, you'll still see those you'll still see those injuries, whether it's a guy who just started his first race or someone who's been doing it for a great number of years.
All right, so we're going to take a brief break for a second. Keith, are your kids able to listen in? Are your students able to listen in?
Yes, they're sitting right here in front of me listening.
All right, so if we have a couple different ways that they can interact, they can, if they use Twitter there, I don't know if that's acceptable at your school.
They're doing it. They're actually using it right now.
Okay, so then they can, if they type in hashtag #TheSMB, they can ask questions of our kids, and you know, then they'll ask them of you or make comments and that kind of thing. And so if that's the easiest, if they're using Twitter, then that's probably the easiest. So George can either respond to them there. George can, and George likes Twitter, so he'll probably tell them to follow him on Twitter, because that's what George does. That's the first thing he says every morning when he wakes up. So, but I was just saying, if you want your kids to interact, that, you know, they can throw in their 2 cents or some of the stories they've heard you tell, or their experience there. So, all right, so we'll return to the regularly scheduled program.
Are there any types of jobs or splitting techniques that are unique to motocross?
No, you basically, what you learn in athletic training, you can apply to all different sports. There's not any specific that I could tell you to do. Of course, every athletic trainer is going to do something different. I may tape an ankle differently than Jeremy tapes an ankle. You know, we may do things differently here and there, but there's not one specific way that I would recommend or that you use. Every situation is going to be different that you're going to run into in athletic training. That's what's unique about athletic training, is it's changing every day, and there's different injuries that come up every day, different situations, and that's what keeps you on your toes.
So there's nothing, you know, extra splinting or padding. Because whenever we interviewed the guy from the rodeo, one thing that I learned from him was if you're doing like a groin or hip spica, they'll actually use a TheraBand and do the hip spica with the TheraBand and then the ACE wrap, because it pulls harder. You know, I mean, those guys are riding bulls and stuff like that. So is there any big takeaway from motocross?
No. It's kind of tough. But like I said, every situation is different. These guys, some of these guys, will or won't wear chest protectors. Some of them will or won't wear neck protection. They don't. Some guys are not comfortable wearing a lot of protective gear, and some guys do. So they don't like to have so much. The taping would be okay, but it's any kind of splinting or any kind of using any type of TheraBand, it's hard for them to get acclimated to, you know, to that quick of time. Now, if it was something they could use in practice during the week, yeah, that'd be great. We could talk to them about it. But of course, they don't have anyone back home to help them with that situation. So it's kind of, like I said, it's difficult to pinpoint or to say, let's use this one specific thing. I mean, I know that doesn't help you out much, but with motocross, motocrossers are kind of a strange animal to where they like to do things a certain way that they've done it, and if you try to change it, they're not going to be used to it, and they're trying to make money. They're not doing it just for fun. They're not doing it for fun. They're trying to make it. They're trying to make a living and do this for money, just like bull riders would, saddle bronc, any of those guys. So,
what is their concussion policy?
Well, there's not a policy per se I haven't put one in, but let me just kind of put into perspective that the Asterix Sports Medicine program that's on the Monster Energy Supercross series now, they use the impact system. They have they started it a couple of years ago to where every rider that is going to sign up for a race, they have to go through an impact, do a baseline test if you're going to be a part of that series, if you're going to race that series. And they will do pre- and post-testing if they feel like you have had an injury, have had a concussion. They have had several riders that they've had, because I usually check a lot of their some of the websites to see if they've, and actually follow their Twitter feeds to make sure to see if they have been cleared, because that's the one thing. They will not let those athletes back out on the track unless they have been cleared. Now, if they have a concussion, it's the same process. They'll go through it during the week. And a lot of times, a lot of these guys live in California. Some are spread out all around the country. Others are. They may be staying with someone they know in California, and they'll actually follow up with the doctor out there or at the track before they're even released to participate, that afternoon for practice, and especially that evening, for the qualifiers.
All right, so is it more common to get a concussion in motocross? Relatively, obviously, there's more football players at your high school than there are motocross athletes, I would think. Mm-hmm. So is it more common in one than the other?
The studies are still going on, just like it is, concussions as a whole. Yeah, even at the high school level, and with the NFL cases that have been happening in the past. It's still a long procedure of following up with taking documenting that information, and there's not a large number. Of course, it's now in place, at the professional level, to where it's getting reported, it's getting documented. They're able to follow it, whereas in the past, just like with any other sport, it hasn't been documented, it hasn't been followed. I mean, even here at baseball at the high school, one of our team docs actually purchased the impact program for us this year, so I'm able to follow up with a lot of these guys and to do baseline testing. And I've had several kids that have got hurt outside of football that I've been able to follow up with and use the impact program.
Where do you see the greatest need for athletic trainers?
Exactly where you're at right now in high school, and that's where the greatest need for athletic trainers is. We have so many athletes all across the country in a lot of different high schools, and I'm sure maybe.
Hello?
All right. It cut out on us again.
Yes, sir.
All right, are you there?
Yes. Yeah, we're here. So we were talking about where do you see the greatest need for athletic trainers?
Yeah, in high schools, we see a lot of injuries that have happened in the past. I mean, currently, with heat exhaustion, heat stroke, concussions, injuries, and things that coaches are not, they're not trained to take care of, of course. And now, of course, most coaches now are being trained to notice concussions and the heat exhaustion and things like that. But I think the greatest needs for athletic trainers is high schools. I mean, most definitely, without a doubt, there's quite a few athletic trainers and GPAs that are, of course, in colleges, but the greatest need, I think, are in high schools, because too many injuries and things go unnoticed that, we try our best as athletic trainers to educate our parents and our coaches, but it doesn't always, especially those places that do not have an athletic trainer, it's really tough to see that happen to those kids. I wish every high school could have an athletic trainer. I know some can't afford it, but there is a way to do so.
All right, so you're in Arkansas, right?
Yes.
All right, what is the athletic trainer situation in your area and then in Arkansas in general?
Well, with Batesville High School is a 5A school. I'm in the process now of trying to get to be hired by the high school and to actually start a sports medicine curriculum here at the high school level. You know, if athletes want to be involved in something in the medical field, athletic training and such like that, that's really what I want to go to next, is I want to be able to help these young people understand athletic training as a whole and make sure that they, if this is something that they want to do, just help them get to that point. You know, we have probably 7 or 8 schools now in Arkansas that have a sports medicine curriculum and that have hired an athletic trainer. Some schools, there are a couple of schools that actually have 4 to 5 ATCs employed by the high school. So now we're in the process of trying to expand that with other schools and get these other schools to understand, you know, the benefit of having an athletic trainer there at the high school level full time instead of just, you know, just having game coverage or practice coverage. You know, show them the benefits of the entire spectrum of the program.
Do you know where Bentonville is?
Yes, Kimber Mathis is the one who I believe was instrumental in getting that started up there.
Yep, we've talked to her on the podcast, and I've actually stolen quite a bit of classroom stuff from her. We made a skeleton or a model of the foot skeleton out of Rice Krispies treats.
Yes,
last year because of what she did, and so there's, you know, I think she's doing some really cool stuff in the classroom there with sports medicine. So I was going to recommend you talk to Kimber Mathis, but never mind, you beat me to it.
Yeah, I've been talking to Kimber and Mathis, and also Jason Cates. He is the head athletic trainer at Cabot High School here in Arkansas, and both of them have been a big help to me as far as trying to get information, you know, out to the coaches, the athletic directors, the superintendents, to let them know, you know, how to start these programs and what the benefits of having this program is.
What are some challenges to being an AT in cold weather?
Wow, that's probably not a good question to ask me, because I'm the crazy guy who wears shorts year round, almost. Except, of course, now we're below freezing. I'm not, but during football season, myself, I wear shorts. It's been a habit or tradition per se. Even, you know, the last 3 years in a row, we've made it to the state championship football finals, and I wear shorts. It's just I can't move around with just pants or wind pants or dress pants, anything like that. I've got to get out on the field to one of my athletes, I want to get there and sprint and get there as fast as I can to find out what's wrong with them. As far as, you know, for me, the challenge for me is having to have gloves on. You know, it's kind of hard to have gloves on if it's cold and take off out there and try to do an evaluation, especially if your fingertips, the tufts of your fingertips are, if they're cold and you can't really get good feeling on things. Other athletic trainers I've seen, when it's cold, you know, on the opposing sideline, they're stationary in one spot. They don't want to move. So, but I usually keep up moving. I follow the ball up and down the field, just to give you an example of what I do in the cold weather. If we're putting the ball to the other end, I'm going to the other end. I follow the ball. I don't stay in one spot because I feel like I need to be right there. If one of my athletes is down, we've got to figure out what's going on, get them off the field, get them on the side, get the evaluation. If we can get them back in, let's do it as quickly as possible. I'm pretty aggressive on those type of things, I guess. So.
Yeah, I should have sent you a picture. I know I tweeted it last night. I was it was about 37 degrees and raining, and I was at soccer. Now, don't get me wrong, I love soccer, and I was really excited to be there. You know, I loved watching our girls play and win in a shootout. But I just went to buy rain boots from Academy, so I had on my thermals, and then I had on my jeans, and then I had on my rain pants, and I had on an Under Armour shirt, a thermal on top of that, and then like a sweatshirt, and then a rain jacket, and a scarf around my face so that my nose wasn't so cold. I had on like 4 pairs of socks. So 37 degrees and raining, you're watching soccer, and you're still wearing shorts?
Yeah, usually. I mean, today I'm not. Of course, I went for a swim this morning, so I didn't have shorts on. So, it was about 22 when I got out of the pool. So,
you're swimming outside?
No. I'm crazy, but I'm not that crazy, I don't think so.
Okay. But actually, last night, there was a girl that I was pretty sure she tore her ACL, but because my hands were cold and wet, it was... All right, so we lost Keith again. So, I was saying there's a girl that I think she tore her ACL, but it was hard for me to tell because, you know, it's cold, it's wet, she's crying, I got gloves on, I got all this stuff, and so I'm like, well... We're going to put you on the sidelines, and you're going to see your athletic trainer tomorrow. Because I wasn't going to say, hey, I think you tore your ACL, but yep. Let me just, you know. So I was like, well, you just need to go see him tomorrow. And then, you know, I text a guy this morning. He's like, yeah, her tibial plateau just about hit me in the face. So I was like, well, there you go. So,
good.
But I definitely feel you on the gloves and stuff like that. Just you lose that feel for things. So,
what is something you do really well as an athletic trainer?
As an athletic trainer, that's a good question. As an athletic trainer, we have the opportunity to do a lot of things. Whether we do them well or not, that's up to each individual. I think an athletic trainer is as good as you can be. You'll get a lot of feedback from parents, from coaches, telling you how much they appreciate you. You know what you do, whether it's a situation you take care of. You know, maybe you had an ACL, a femur fracture, something. Someone just pats you on the back, tells you, hey, we appreciate you. We thank you. If I had to pinpoint something exactly, you know, what I feel like I do well as an athletic trainer, I think I treat that athlete just like an individual. I don't put them up on a pedestal. I don't want them to feel like that they're all that bag of chips, but at the same time, I want them to understand that I'm there for them. I'm going to treat each and every athlete at my age. Of course, I'm 47 now. I treat each and every athlete just like they were my own son or daughter. I'm not going to say anything unkind to them. I'm not going to be hateful to them or anything, but I am going to treat them, my students, I treat them just like they're my daughters. You know, we try to talk about, we meet every year before every football season. I want everybody to act as a family, and if they have something they want to come talk to me about, they can. So I guess it's a kind of a combination of several things, I guess, what I could be good at. But I feel like I treat people the way that they want to be treated, the way that they should be treated. I guess you could say that. It's kind of here and there. I'm jumping around on different topics, I guess, on that. But as an athletic trainer, we all have our own special skill set of doing certain things, but maybe being a good listener, being there for that athlete, and, you know, being a person, you know, in general, I guess.
That's good. I've been told before that my bedside manner was not very good. I don't think that it's something I've really tried to develop as, you know, a professional, as adult, and is the ability to connect and build relationships. Yeah, I just don't think it's something that's really easy for me. You know, some teachers or athletic trainers, they just have a loyal following, and I just don't feel that I'm that kind of person that for some reason just has that really easy ability to connect with people. So it's something I've been working on, but I'm glad that goes that well for you.
Well, I tell you what helped me the most with that, when you mentioned that about bedside manner. Early in my career as an athletic trainer, I had the opportunity, the orthopedic doctor, that group that we worked for, they had us rotate with them during clinic. So being a physician extender and just actually going into that room and talking to that patient and just asking them, hey, what's going on? You know, how can I help you? You know, what can I do to make things better for you? You know, what's going on with your knee or your shoulder or, you know, said area? And you just talk to them, treat them like an individual. You know, they have a personality. You want them to know that when you walk in that room, you're there for them. And it's the same way when you're taking care of your athletes here. I mean, we can kid at the high school level, we can kid around with a lot of the guys or the girls and you know, make jokes and stuff. But when it comes right down to it, you're there for that person. And that's, I think being able to spend that time as a physician extender has helped me with my bedside manner per se, to be able to treat people let them know that you're there for them.
Yeah, I talk to people, and my wife's really good about it. I think being married and especially having kids has changed a lot, changed who I am a lot. And so, you know, we talk about it, and she agrees that I've changed, that I'm a little bit softer. I'm not as rough. I'm not as blunt as I used to be. So, you know, just progress takes time.
Oh, yeah, it does. It does.
What's your experience with triathlons?
Well, I started after I got through doing motocross, and I was still doing, when I was doing some coverage, I'm going to back up a little bit on for your question there on that, is I used to do a lot of powerlifting. I'm about 5'7", 5'8". I used to do a lot of lifting, and I was always interested in lifting, you know, in high school and in college. Never get to do a lot because I didn't have enough time going to classes and working and such, trying to get everything done. So it gave me an opportunity to learn more about myself and about lifting again and about different muscle groups as you're an athletic trainer, as it applies to lifting. Well, back in 2009, I decided I was tired of doing all the lifting. I had too many guys that I knew of that wearing their shoulders, knees out. I was like, you know, and I ran track in high school. I was a sprinter by trade in high school. So, and I loved running. So I started doing more distance events. So I've been doing marathons, half marathons, and I've actually got a marathon here in about 2 weeks. But in high school, I always was interested in triathlons. Triathlons when I was in high school was actually just getting started. Watching Dave Scott and Mark Allen just go neck and neck all the way to the finish line, you know, for a triathlon, I thought, what is this? So, and I just kind of put it off. And last year, the past couple of years, I've actually looked at triathlons, trying to somehow fit it into my work schedule and racing schedule as far as running. And last year, I started doing some triathlons, just doing some smaller ones. This is actually my second year to do triathlons. And this summer, I've signed up to do my first half Ironman. The ultimate goal is, of course, to go to Hawaii, go to Kona, and to do the Ironman World Championships, but you have to qualify for that. So I'm in the stepping stone process of getting to there. So I'm looking forward to doing some more triathlons this summer, doing my first half Ironman, and then building from there and doing some more half Ironmans.
All right, so we've talked to our registered dietitian here, and she was the spokesperson for Chocolate Milk, and she went to the Ironman in Hawaii and, you know, came back and told us all about it. And so, real quick, since you do a whole lot of training, do you use do you drink chocolate milk at all to help you recover?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. Yes, I do. Especially after these long, strenuous workouts when I've got to be on the bike for an hour or an hour and a half. And then you have to get, it's called a brick workout. You'll have to do that. And then you get off and go run 3 to 4 miles afterwards. So, it's kind of tough juggling it, you know, with athletic training, but I have to do all my training in the mornings. And if I have quite a bit of hours I've worked during the week, I'll make sure I'll do, you know, it's easier to do that in the mornings because more of the afternoon, lunch from now till, you know, till time to go home is all the practices and rehabs, and I see all the athletes. So mornings are actually better for me. But triathlons are a really good experience as far as, you know, as far as being an athlete. Everybody always asks me, why do you want to do triathlons? Even, you know, our head football coach, he's also our athletic director. He rides with me to all the football games, to and from the football games. So he always asks me, why do you like running so much? Why do you like to do triathlons? And it's kind of hard to explain it because it's not for everybody. Triathlons is it's not a bucket list thing for me. It's not something that I'm trying to accomplish, you know, in my goal of life or anything like that. It's something that it's an experience that's like none other. And I can't wait to cross that finish line and to hear them say, you are an Ironman. I'm probably going to break down and cry on that point, but that's, it's pretty cool to watch all those people who actually go through that and the training that they have to do too. So it's a pretty neat deal to be a part of. So, and it's a unique group of a unique sport. As you can't, you know, you can be good at one and not good at the other two, and you work on getting better at the other two and just kind of have an overall better presence. And as far as from a healthy standpoint, I feel like I'm in pretty good shape. I'm in better shape. I'm not going to say I'm in the best shape ever because I feel like that's where you stop. You can always be better, you know, at everything. So that's me for triathlons. I'm just getting started with the bigger ones. I'm just trying to get better at my swim. I'm runner by trade per se, but the bike and the run, I'm trying to get better with, you know, getting off the bike and being able to continue that run. So,
You said you're 42?
I'm 47.
47, and you're just now starting triathlons.
Yeah, but I ask my students, I probably act like a high schooler, so at times, but...
Yeah, you sound like you got a lot of energy over there, always walking up and down the sidelines and wearing shorts and doing all this exercise, swimming when it's 22 degrees outside. So.
Got to. It's pretty intense.
All right, well, I'm going to have to break the action real quick. The kids are going to go to lunch, so...
I appreciate you guys listening in, and I hope that athletic training is a part of your future somewhere along the lines if you're still interested. So.
All right, so I'll ask you these last two questions here. Okay. What do you think is the best part of being an athletic trainer?
Best part of being an athletic trainer? Yeah, I tell you what, let's make it two-part answer. I think being able to teach the students and getting them to understand, you know, and it may not, like I said before, it may not be, they may not want to be an athletic trainer. They may want to go on and be a nurse, a dietitian, something else. They may want to be a doctor, maybe something else in the medical field. You know, if I can help them get, you know, get them to understand and help them get to that point, help them make that decision, I'm happy with that. And also, just seeing that athlete after you've rehabbed them, whether they've had surgery or whether they haven't had surgery, it just puts a smile on your face to see them go back out there and compete, whether it's football, baseball, you know, whatever sport it is, and try to go back. You know, I could come up with numerous examples that I've had this year with athletes that have been injured and just seeing them go back out and then they get injured again, you know, for it to only happen again. It's kind of heartbreaking, but at the same time, it's like, all right, let's load up and let's start over again. Let's get you better so we can get you back out there. So that's the best part of athletic training for me is just being able to get those people back in the game of life, per se.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there in a return on the play. But honestly, I think for me, the best part is I really enjoy teaching, which is funny because whenever I started off as an athletic trainer in college, I was like, I'm going to work professional sports. I don't want to work in high school. I don't want to work with kids. But after I did my internship with the Texans, I realized, you know, the impact that you can make on their lives is minimal. But with high school kids, you can make such an impact. You know, just having them come back and visit, having them talk to you, having them ask you, what do you think I should do? Yeah, it's, you know, open up their eyes. Like some of them you'll see with this podcast that they get to see professionals and they get to talk to all these people that they wouldn't have ever thought about. And so this kind of thing, just doing something new and creative and encouraging growth and development in the students, I definitely agree is one of the best parts of my job.
You know, I failed to interject in there during the introduction that I also worked semi-pro football around here for about 5 years in Arkansas. And that was an experience for me at a different level. And also I got the opportunity to do minor league baseball for a couple of years too. And that's, you know, kind of like you said, you work with the Texans, you know, you were not going to have much of an impact, you know, with those folks. You know, they're just doing a job, but at the same time, you want to be able to help them understand what's going on. At the professional level up there, they just, you know, that's a different animal, I guess you could say. So.
Yeah, for sure. I'm not saying the athletic trainers there don't have an impact, but.
Oh, no.
Just in my opinion, it's a much more. You know, it's a lot earlier in life, so you can really point them in much more of a direction.
Sure, exactly.
All right, so you worked minor league football or semi-pro football?
Yeah, semi-pro football. They had it was a league called the North American Football League, and there were they had one team here in Arkansas. They were trying to start up a second one, but I haven't done that in so long. I don't think they're still. Doing that league, and we had, you know, I mean, the team that I worked with, I mean, they made it all the way to the semifinals. They had to fly all the way out to Seattle, Washington. I didn't get to go because that was during high school football season. So a lot of their games would be on Saturday nights, so I could go do those. But it was always tough to try to pack up and drive somewhere, you know, and go with the team, especially if they had to hit the road quite a bit of a distance. Minor league baseball, it was basically just the home games there that I helped out with. So,
were you doing motocross, minor league baseball, and minor league football, or
it wasn't all at the same time? Okay. It's just kind of spanned out that direction. So, of course, baseball, you know, is during the summer, and a lot of the motocross stuff it would go on. It goes on year round, but the stuff that I was covering, the series I was covering, started in January and it would end in March. So. you know, you had a short window right there, and then you could go to the outdoor nationals, outdoor races, and you could do those, but those are spread out to where it, you know, it's not a problem. So,
gotcha. So earlier we were talking about the motocross. You said you went to LA when you were working the motocross as an athletic trainer, and that's just because you wanted to.
Yeah, it's just because you wanted to try to get some more experience and go out there. I mean, I had the opportunity to go out there to do some. You know, I wanted to be able to have some more, not look good on a resume, but to have more experience in different sports and try to bring that, see if it's something that I want to go. Do I want to stay doing motocross all the time? Do I want to stay with high school? Do I want to go to college, work college, athletic training, you know, those type of things. That's just what I was, at the time, I was trying to figure out where my place was in athletic training. So,
all right. And since you've done most everything, done, you know, professional baseball, football, motocross, and now you're at the high school, do you think this is going to be your dream job as an athletic trainer where you really found a home?
Yes, I feel better working with the high school athletes as opposed to anything else. And, you know, you had mentioned earlier, you have an opportunity to have a huge influence on a young person, you know, through the rest of their life. And, you know, you see these athletes who, I mean, I've had athletes from other schools that I haven't seen probably in, you know, 10 years. And they'll say, hey, you know, I'll remember you from, you know, you helped me with my ankle or you helped me with this. And, you know, they'll find me on Twitter somehow or another and we'll connect that way. But it's cool to see athletes, especially now here at Batesville. I'll see athletes who graduated a couple of years ago. I'll see some of my student trainers who come back and say, hey, I'm finally graduating college. I'm going to go be a doctor or I'm going to be a dietitian. I'm going to be a nurse. And it's cool that you've had a good influence on you know, those athletes or that individual. So,
all right. Well, we've talked about a lot. Do you have anything else you want to throw out there about all your experiences or things you learned? Or
I think as an athletic trainer, I'll just leave it at this, is that to find your calling in athletic training, you have to love what you're doing. You know, I've seen athletic trainers who are not happy with what they're doing and they won't stay in athletic training. They're off doing, you know, something else. I've run across athletic trainers who are very happy with what they do, and this is their calling. This is what they want to do. And while they may not have gone out and got all the different experiences from different sports like I have, but they have decided that this is where they need to be. This is their focus, and this is their part. This is their life right here, is influencing each individual that you come across, and they will remember you for that. And that's that. And you know, there's no raise in salary, no pat on the back, no anything else that's gonna make you feel better than that right there, that you've had such an influence on a young person.
Yeah, I had an athlete probably three or four years ago graduating. You know, he found me on Facebook. Hey, Coach Jackson, you know, I hurt my ankle. What should I do? It's like, well, you know, you can come up and see me, or I can, you know, send you this set of instructions of what I typically give somebody and then show that to him. And, you know, that kind of thing, is that he trusted me enough to reach out and say, hey, you know, I know you took care of me then. What can I do now? And that I did build that relationship with him so that, you know, he felt comfortable coming back. Yeah. So, you know, that's like you just said, it's really cool to see that come back.
You just said something that was funny. They called you Coach Jackson. I still have kids that will call me Coach, and I'm like, listen, it's okay to call me Coach if you want to, but I said, I'm an athletic trainer. And I want to try to, you know, we always have the big emphasis now of, instead of saying trainer, say athletic trainer.
Right.
Just like, you know, my student trainers, I don't, you know, we have some coaches that are old school. They'll call them managers. And I said, no, they're student trainers. So try to give, you know, I want to make sure everybody has that identity, that they understand. Because if you just say coach, that's kind of a generic term for everything that's, you know, that's out there. So,
yeah, I gotcha. And usually, actually, most people just call me Jackson.
Yeah.
But, you know, some of them, whenever I was teaching biology, they would, you know, he was one of my biology students, so he would call me Coach Jackson. That way in the classroom, it was a little bit more formal, but, you know, I'm not too big on people saying athletic trainer Jackson. It just, sounds funny. And so to avoid them avoid them saying Trainer Jackson, you know, so we're not using the title incorrectly, they just call me Jackson. It's, you know, intimate enough and respectful enough for me. So, all right. So, very cool. Well, Keith, I really appreciate you coming on and talking with us. And then, all right, I'm going to wrap it up here.
Okay.
All right, there's people we definitely want to mention to help support us. Greater Houston Athletic Trainer Society offers the CEU opportunities. So if you become a member of GHATS or the Greater Houston Athletic Trainer Society or GHATS.org, then you become a member of that for $20 or $25, and it's good for a year, a calendar year from September 1st to August 31st. And it's about $20, and you can get CEUs for listening to the podcast, but you have to be a member of GHATS to get the CEUs. So once you get, you're a member, you're inside the member area, you can complete the form, and then I can send you the CEU certificates. So this is episode 69, so it's about 69 possible CEU hours. If you're really, really hurting for CEUs, you can listen to all 69 of them. So, you know, GHATS is definitely really cool, and I'm looking forward to continuing to improve the content quality so that we can draw more athletic trainers into listening to the podcast and using that as an opportunity to gain CEU hours and make the CEUs applicable to them so they can do it on their own schedule and own time. So definitely excited about GHATS and their support. And then Pasadena ISD Education Foundation, I just turned in two more grants for things here in sports medicine. And then, you know, there's so much that they've done. Almost all of this equipment is from them or donors choose. And coming up, we're going to be talking to the Education Foundation, Donors Choose, and Fund for Teachers, three grant opportunities that I've used. I've been able to get things from them for the podcast, for my classroom, for a trip, for trainings, and all sorts of different things. So it's going to be really, really cool to talk to those people so I can help other people gain knowledge on letting somebody else fund your dreams or support your classroom. So definitely want to thank them. I want to thank Keith Shireman. You can find him at KeithMXATC, so at KeithMXATC. I am currently looking for a guest for the summer, or so maybe I want to try and record some on Fridays and release them during the summer, because I want to try and continue the podcast throughout the summer. So if you have a guest, if you have somebody, something you want to hear, then definitely let me know, and then we'll see what we can do about getting them on, or getting you on, and releasing that over the summer so that we can continue to be consistent rather than just taking a summer break. Again, the Sports Medicine Broadcast can be found on sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. Again, most every Wednesday you can watch live, join in the conversation. We're really working on getting Twitter working with hashtag VSMB so that we can show that on Google Plus, or the kids can easily see that and read your comments. You can tweet directly to me at PHS Sports Med. So that's me at PHS Sports Med. Google Plus is Sports Medicine Broadcast. Facebook.com/PHS Athletic Training. Well, for Jeremy, the Sports Medicine One crew, and Mr. Keith Shireman, that's a wrap.